Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Necessary Roughness Podcast, episode number 105, presented by Last Word on Sports. As usual, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic. Hope you all enjoyed the NFL draft. We spoke just a few weeks ago, but we jumped our episode before the draft, and then we're doing the May episode right after the draft. We had a couple predictions. We'll see how that went across. We'll go through some of the early picks, some of the noteworthy ones. It's not a pick-by-pick breakdown. It's not going to be that kind of show. Abbreviated sort of standout seven-ish structure. But, you know, it's May. How much football can we realistically talk about? I mean, there's a handful of talking points you could probably predict, and we'll hit them. So let's jump right in. Let's talk about the draft. I projected, or predicted, far from Mel Kiper over here, but projected quite a few trades, and I was even a little surprised, even more than I expected. You know, the intriguing stuff starts when you get around, well, number three. Trey Lance being the move, I didn't understand the hype or the, I don't know, seemingly assumed thing that was Mac Jones to San Francisco at three. They didn't need to go up to three for him, and that was obvious to me. You make the assumption a couple of months ago that number three would have been Fields. Fields winds up falling a little bit to 11. Falling past some teams that, you know, you can make the argument might have benefited from drafting him, but that's not what we're here to do. Trey Lance at three, I'd be lying to you if I said I've seen a lot of Trey Lance over at North Dakota State. The fact of the matter is he's coming out of a, you know, similar situation to a guy, well, like Carson Wentz, who went to the same university, and they talked about how well he's facing lesser competition and things like that. And you take a look at the fact that realistically, in terms of passing stats, and this is via, you've got 2019, 16 games, 67% completion percentage, just about, 2,800 yards, just about, 28 touchdowns, no picks. You know, he's got the mobility, ran for 1,100 yards that year and 14 touchdowns. Last year, you've got one game, and his freshman year there, 18, you've got two games, and in those two games, he attempted one pass. So realistically, you're kind of betting on a guy who had a good year. Are the tools there? From what I've seen, and from what people much above my pay grade have estimated, yes, they are, to be sort of a dual threat sort of guy. Is it a good fit? I tend to think so, because they're still in a pickle with this Jimmy Garoppolo contract, so if they're going to be paying him, they might as well be playing him, which gives Trey a chance to develop, on top of the fact that they can work him into the offense, similar to how the previous regime, a couple regimes ago, did with Colin Kaepernick while Alex Smith was there. I think it's a very similar situation. You can make the argument Alex Smith was a better QB at that time than Garoppolo is right now. I tend to agree with that assessment. I think Alex Smith, you know, obviously hanging it up now, shortchanged tremendously over the course of his career. One of the sadder, you know, whole careers, and maybe we'll talk about that another time. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Famer or anything, and it's arguably the first few years some wasted potential there, but he never had really a great go of it, you know. He gets to be Alex Smith, actually, under Harbaugh in San Francisco, and before you know it, he's hurt, before you know it, he's benched. Winds up in Kansas City. He gets to be Alex Smith again. Before you know it, same situation. Mahomes winds up the guy. They knew he was going to be the guy eventually. They win a Super Bowl there. San Francisco goes to a Super Bowl with him on the bench. He winds up in Washington. Obviously, the team is doing very well. He gets hurt again. It's a whole sad thing. Either way, I could see Trey Lance getting out there at some point this year, and I could see a situation where Jimmy G plays decent enough, and he doesn't get out there. And you wind up with a year of Jimmy G, or 2 years of Jimmy G, whatever it is, you know, and you wind up having him sit on the bench. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, per se. The thing that would be an issue, as you take a look, is that they've signed Mr. G, to this huge contract, right? 5 years, $137.5 million. They've got 2 years left on this, 21 and 22. You tend to think he's going to start at least one of them. However, if he goes out and plays poorly, then you wind up in a pickle. Because then you're going to have to play the kid potentially before he's ready. and you're going to have a really expensive backup. You take a look at the numbers this past year. In six games, Jimmy G, 67% completion percentage, which is not bad, 1,100 yards, seven touchdowns to five picks. I mean, he played pretty well the year before, 4,000 passing yards, 27 touchdowns, 13 picks, 69% completion percentage. But you look at the facts here, and the guy's played more than six games once in his career, whether it be due to injuries or due to, you know, being on the bench when he was in New England. Everyone's always been high on him. I'm not everyone, if I'm being completely honest. I think there was a big overrated tag that could have been slapped on him when he was thrown out there in San Fran. You talk about, hey, look, they were 5-0. 1,500 yards, seven touchdowns, five picks. Look at him go. Okay, cool. But either way, I still think there's an overrated tag in there, and I hope for San Francisco fans, wherever you are, that he gives you enough production this year that you could let Trey Lance sit, maybe work his way in. Number four, Kyle Pitts. Now, Kyle Pitts, from all prognostications, is one of the best tight ends to come out of college football in some time. Ran a great 40 time. He's got good hands. University of Florida, you know, blah, 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 blah. The intriguing thing to me is the Atlanta Falcons taking him and then the Julio Jones trade rumors popping up. Because, first of all, I don't lend too much credence to them because I've heard them before. Slow news day, maybe? I don't know. But Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts, and whatever they can kind of muster in that backfield. You know, we take a look. This, you know, they had what? The rehabilitation of a guy like Todd Gurley? Is he going to be back as one of their lead backs this year? I don't know. Brian Hill? Decent enough. Ito Smith? Decent enough. This is a team that's presumably going to lean on its passing game. We saw Russell Gage even crack 750 last year. This has the potential to be a sneaky, decent team. Will the defense follow it up? I mean, we take a look at Matt Ryan's numbers. 16 games, 65% completion percentage, 4,600 yards, just about, 26 touchdowns, 11 picks. Not a bad year by any stretch of the imagination. The offense should be good enough, but can they hold these leads? This is a team that blew multiple leads last year, late in games. So, was there a pick in the top 10 that you could make the argument would have benefited them more? Potentially? You know, would one of the high cornerbacks like Patrick Surtain II or J.C. Horn have done it? Would Micah Parsons have done it? I don't know. I mean, Ryan was sacked 41 times. Would an O-lineman have done it? Would Penei Sewell have been able to work his way in there? I don't know. Trade down and get a guy like Slater that everyone seems to think is going to move inside? I don't know. What I do know is you get a great tight end prospect who could be, within a few years, one of the better tight ends in the league. So I can't knock it too much. But it definitely, in my mind, poo-poos the Julio Jones trade rumors. It just doesn't make sense. You're going to draft a tight end to build around this passing game. You're going to get rid of Julio. It's a tough spot when you're getting rid of legends like that, especially considering, I mean, let's be honest here. Julio Jones is not a spring chicken right now. He's not 28 years old. He's 32 years old, you know, freshly, as of this February. I'm not saying he's washed, but Julio, you know, only played 9 games last year, and he's getting older. Would you be able to get good value? Yeah, of course. But you tend to wonder why they wouldn't want to get that value before the draft. You know, get some draft capital, potentially try to jump back up immediately into this draft and get a guy like a Devontae Smith. You know what I mean? Or even if it's a little bit later, get a guy like, I mean, the Giants take Kadarius Toney at 20. You know what I mean? Maybe get a guy like Rashad Bateman that wound up going to the Ravens, or even in the second round, guys like Elijah Moore. Guys like Rondale Moore, you know, Double Moore, Terrence Marshall, Dwayne Eskridge, great name, by the way. I don't know. It's interesting to me, but I'd say it's a pretty good pick. Then you have the Bengals going receiver over tackle, and I don't hate it. I don't hate it because it's a guy from LSU, presumably, you know, the chemistry and things like that. It maybe Joe wanted a receiver more than a lineman. Maybe he's not as nervous. But I know Joe has a surgically repaired knee. So I don't hate it, but I certainly don't love it. I'd say TBD on how good of a pick that was. Jalen Waddle made perfect sense for Miami. Penei Sewell, who drops all the way to 7, And that's not a big drop, but for a guy that everyone said could be a Hall of Famer. Multiple draft analysts saying he could be the Hall of Famer in this draft class. And he goes to Detroit, and, you know, Detroit has a great track record of getting the most out of their players and getting nothing for it. Back-to-back corners, 8 and 9. And then you have the Devontae Smith trade-up. I loved this trade-up from Philly, I'm not going to lie. From a purely analytical perspective, I loved it. I didn't understand it from the perspective of the Cowboys, who traded back and allowed a division rival to draft a Heisman-winning receiver that they might have to face for the next 10 years. However, I guess if you're playing three-dimensional backgammon, they put him on a team that's having a quarterback issue instead of a team that the New York Giants, who presumably would have taken him immediately at number 11, a team that has, quote-unquote, their quarterback. If Danny Dimes has another rough year, I'm not sold on him, so I'm saying has from their perspective. I personally haven't seen nearly enough to think that after this year, if they miss the playoffs again, he will be their quarterback, which is why I think the Giants moving back after this trade-up by Philly made sense, because they're acquiring some draft capital. Their guy is gone. Next year, maybe you'll have the, you know, the capital to trade up in the first round if you need a QB, or you can put some pieces around Danny Dimes and maybe fill in some spots on that defense. So from Philly's perspective, I love it, though. He's an impact player who's been getting ripped for being too small. We'll see if it works. I mean, he's 6 feet tall. He's not 5'5". He's not Trindon Holiday out there. So he's a little slim. Okay, we can work on that. He's got every skill that you'd need for the most part as far as being a college wide receiver coming into the pro game that you'd look for, and it's a great pick. Then you have Chicago trading up for Justin Fields, which makes a lot of sense to me. Chicago said they're going with Dalton, and they just might for the first 7-ish games. We'll see as the schedule comes out soon. But it's going to be Justin Fields by the end of the year. You know, it's a good pick. It is. I can't knock it. I can't. Especially considering you have teams lurking like the Patriots, you know, down there. They might be interested in a QB like the Washington football team. They might be interested. You never know. There was a report that the Minnesota Vikings were ready and willing to draft Justin Fields at 14 to replace Kirk Cousins on that huge contract when he makes his way out, which is interesting. Great pick. The Mac Jones pick is what it is. Everybody said it would be a New England kind of guy if he didn't wind up number 3 to San Francisco. Then again, many people also had him number 3 to San Francisco, so it's hard to say everybody. But we'll see what happens there. It's Cam's team, according to Belichick. Will that last the whole season? I don't think so. Though there are more pieces around Cam this year, we'll see what he can put out there. I wasn't very impressed with what he showed as a passer last season. We'll see what happens. I'm legally obligated as a Giants fan, as I've told you many times, or if, you know, growing up a Giants fan, a little bit more analytical as we get into the professional end of it. Kadarius Toney at 20. I thought it was kind of a reach. But then supposedly Jacksonville was interested at 25. Maybe the Giants knew that, and therefore they took Toney. You know, we'll see what happens. I was really, you know, putting on my fan hat, hoping for Devontae Smith to fall, and it happened. And one pick before, of course, our division rival trades to our other division rival. Maybe they were thanking them for throwing that game at the end of the year. Shout out to Doug Peterson, wherever you are. Hopefully sitting on your couch. And if you're listening, Doug, shout out to you, Doug. Either way, the rest of it goes as is. Pittsburgh going Najee Harris, I thought was, you know, kind of interesting. It's Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh needs a running game because they're the Steelers. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter that some teams can get by running the ball, you know, 13 times a game with running backs you've never heard of. The Pittsburgh Steelers need kind of a hard-nosed kind of running back they can go to. It's just the way they do things. And Najee Harris out of Alabama, trying to continue that long line of Alabama backs, some of which not very successful, but a guy like Derrick Henry, of course, very successful at the NFL level. So, yeah. I don't hate it. I like it. The later we go, we start to get into guys that, you know, like I said, I'm not a draft expert. It's an NFL show, not a college show. Shout out to Asante Samuel Jr. for making it to the league. He's with the Chargers. You know, just scrolling through, we had the Notre Dame linebacker, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, JOK, as they call him for obvious reasons. It's a little hard to pronounce. Owusu Koromoa. That's a little bit better. He dropped to 52, which some people had him higher in the second round, maybe even late first round. Supposedly due to a potential health scare, heart condition. Unclear the circumstances, obviously, with HIPAA things and things like that. They can't really put that information out there, nor should they, if I'm being completely honest. But he winds up in Cleveland, and from all the accounts that I've heard, Cleveland had a pretty darn good draft. They get Greg Newsom the second in the first round. You know, help pad that secondary a little bit. Then they get JOK. Then they wind up getting Anthony Schwartz, a wide receiver, to help out. You know, then they wind up, you know, some more O-line help, a linebacker, a D-tackle, something like that. So, good on them. I think that's all we got for the draft. Like I said, it's not a draft recap. We'll just go through the notable ones here for me. And the interesting ones and the storylines that devolve from it. So next, we are, you know where we're going with this. We're going to move on into the Aaron Rodgers, whatever word you want to use, dilemma, situation, debacle even. Rodgers coming off a year, of course, 13-3 record, 70.7% completion percentage, 48 touchdowns to 5 picks. The guy played out of his mind. He also didn't run into the end zone in that one play against the Buccaneers. Sorry, Green Bay fan, you had to hear it once again. This is a weird situation. And I say that because supposedly it boiled over for Rodgers when they cut, when the Packers released wide receiver Jake Kumerow. 29-year-old wideout went undrafted. He had one catch last year for the Bills. Supposedly when they cut Jake Kumerow, it was the death knell in their relationship. Now, first things first, kudos to whoever used that phrase, because I have never heard it in my very short life. Moreover, in two seasons with the Green Bay Packers, Jake Kumerow was targeted 32 times for 20 catches, 322 yards, 2 touchdowns. This is what puts you over the edge. Shenanigans. Like, I get it, you know, the concept of the straw that broke the camel's back. I get it. But there's no way, no how, that that's the problem. That can't be the one that breaks the camel's back when you look around. I mean, this Green Bay team was good. This last year's Green Bay team was genuinely a good team. You know, and I'm not just, you know, it wasn't Rodgers carrying a cast of nobodies. They bring back Aaron Jones, who was their leading rusher, 1,100 yards in 14 games. You know, they drafted A.J. Dillon last year, who looks like he could be a decent contributor. You look at the wide receivers on this team, and they're not bums. I mean, Davante Adams is, for some people, a top five wideout in the league. I don't know if I'd go that far. I'd have to do a ranking, and maybe we'll do that next month, because it's going to be a little bit of a light month. But Marquez Valdez-Scantling is a pretty decent player. Robert Tonyan, look, they brought in Jimmy Graham forever ago, and it didn't work. So let Jimmy go. Robert Tonyan comes out of nowhere, 586 receiving yards, 11 touchdowns at the tight end position. Alan Lazard is a decent wideout. You want to say, look, this team doesn't have a true number two wideout? Perhaps. You can make the argument. You can make the argument Marquez Valdez-Scantling is not a great number two. Sure, but Valdez-Scantling, Lazard, St. Brown, these guys are decent contributors. I mean, St. Brown ended with 7 catches, but you know, they're decent contributors. Aaron Jones is a good running back. Davante Adams is a great wide receiver. Tanyan's a good tight end. This O-line was pretty good. I mean, how many times did Rodgers wind up getting sacked last year? 20 times in 16 games? What are you mad at? Like, you take a look on the defensive end. They went out and acquired guys like Adrian Amos. They drafted a guy like Darnell Savage. I mean, they've brought in a lot of these guys. Christian Kirksey they brought in. Jair Alexander, I believe homegrown. You know, they bring in a guy like Kevin King, Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith. This, you know, the front office seems to be working to build around a guy like Rodgers. And I think they're doing a pretty good job of it, if I'm being completely honest. So I don't understand where the beef comes from. I mean, you take a look as we look through even the numbers in his career. I mean, in 2018, he got sacked 49 times. The years surrounding that, 2016, 35, 2017, 22 times in half a year. That's the year he got hurt. 2019, 36. So those numbers are trending down. The offensive line is better than it was. Now, is it frustration boiling over from the fact that, you know, it's been so long since they've been to the Super Bowl, since they won their Super Bowl, perhaps? I don't know. It's intriguing to me that for some reason that led to him boiling over. And it's even more intriguing to me when you see some of these storylines around this. You know, supposedly, Brett Favre, in an interview on ESPN Wisconsin's radio, Wild and Tausch, detailed his text conversation with Aaron Rodgers, per Adam Schefter, and made comparisons to his own departure in 08. I think I know Aaron fairly well, and honestly, I just don't see him coming back and saying, all right, let's bury the hatchet, whatever caused the rift, I'm going to go come back and play for, because I love the guys, I love the Packers fans. Favre added that his gut tells him Rodgers is done with the Packers. No QB has ever played 17 seasons with the Green Bay Packers. It's a completely arbitrary number and statistic, I'm going to be completely honest with you. It's completely arbitrary. Completely and wholly arbitrary. I don't get it. And then you add on Richard Sherman saying Aaron Rodgers has been disrespected. 100%, no question. He's been getting disrespected by Green Bay for a while. For a while? I mean, excuse me. We just detailed the team that they've built around him, right? So let's take a look. It's got to be money that they're disrespecting him, right? Aaron Rodgers got to be playing for minimum wage. Aaron Rodgers is actually playing for less than minimum wage. He's donating his minimum wage salary to Boys and Girls of America. Aaron Rodgers is in the midst of a four-year, $134 million contract, which had $98.7 million guaranteed. I beg you, all the people listening to this, I thank you for being here, first of all. If it's your first episode, shout out to you. But I beg you, please disrespect me like that. Please disrespect me to the tune of $90 million. You know, come on now. $98 million, he's being disrespected? With this team, they keep the running back in Aaron Jones, who I thought they might let walk and try and go the cheap way with it, which is what I would have done, but they extend Jones. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Davante Adams still around. What, they let Jimmy Graham walk? Big deal. They let Jordy Nelson walk when he was getting old? Look at how good he did for the Raiders. Not very. I mean, come on now. What is it? You want them to trade up and draft a running back? I don't get it. What is it? Is it because they drafted a QB last year? Aaron, you're 38. You are not going to play until the end of time. They recognized value in Jordan Love dropping, and they said, you know what? Let's take him where we take him. Let's take him at 26. They didn't trade up for him. You want to talk about Jordan Love not being a great QB in college? I didn't see too much Utah State football, but, you know, his freshman year, 12 games, 55% completion percentage, 8 touchdowns, 6 picks. Not it. But his sophomore year, significant improvement. 10% jump almost in completion percentage, double the passing yards, 32 touchdowns to 6 picks. His junior year, not great. 20 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. That's the big issue. But they saw him falling, and they recognized value. Who's to say they didn't want to throw him in a Taysom Hill kind of situation? I don't know. You know, I mean, he is a guy, he didn't rush for much, but he could be kind of something. They recognize some value there. I don't know. If you want to feel disrespected by that, by all means, feel disrespected by the fact that the team drafted a quarterback when you're 38 years old. You're going to play till the end of time. I find that kind of bizarre, and it's a little bit of projecting on the half of Richard Sherman. Usually I love Richard, but that's a reach to call that disrespect. $130 million extension, keeping the guys around you. It's not like they're putting putzes out there. Come on, they're not pinching pennies. I don't get it. We're obligated to do this now because this is what we're talking about. So where's the realistic fits for Aaron Rodgers? Everywhere. Literally everywhere. Not Buffalo. They have a QB. You can make the argument Miami could be interested. I doubt it. You can make the argument New England should have been interested. You can make the argument the Jets will be, well, not with Zach Wilson, perhaps, but could have been interested. Pittsburgh with Big Ben aging. If Big Ben calls it a career after this season, maybe they should go make a trade for Aaron Rodgers. I doubt it. Cincinnati's good. They just drafted Burrow. So let's be realistic. Obviously, I'm kidding. In the AFC East, I don't see anyone being interested. Maybe a team like the Patriots just because they want to accelerate a win now, but I don't think they're good enough to do that. Miami's with Tua. They're dedicated. The Jets just drafted a guy. You don't really want Zach Wilson to sit for a couple of years, although you never know. The Jets do tend to make weird decisions sometimes. Nobody in the AFC North, aside from a random retirement from Ben. The AFC South, maybe the Colts are wishing they didn't pull the trigger on Wentz if this was going to happen. Maybe a team like Houston, if this Deshaun Watson thing does not blow over, which it appears the accusations made against him are certainly serious enough not to, and I'm not trying to poo-poo them, perhaps he will not be playing this year, but the team is not good at all, so they would not be investing in the quarterback position, especially when they already have a quarterback. Jacksonville just drafted a QB. The AFC West, it would just be Denver. You know, the Raiders have a QB for now. The Chargers have a QB, and the Chiefs have a QB for the future and for now. It would be Denver. In the NFC East, you can make the argument the New York Giants would be interested, or should be at least. The Philadelphia Eagles could be interested, though it's a little early in their little rebuild or retooling. The Washington football team, the division champion, should be interested. In the NFC North, you're assuming they're not going to trade in division. Either way, even if they were, wouldn't really be a fit unless Kirk Cousins were to, you know, poof away for the Vikings. If he's really going to follow the playbook of his predecessor, Brett Favre, then, you know, the Vikings is the move. I mean, Kirk Cousins got 21 and 22 left on his deal. Who knows? Rodgers goes somewhere for 2 years and joins their team at the age of 40. Sounds familiar. In the NFC South, the Panthers just acquired Sam Darnold, but I wouldn't rule that out. And New Orleans is, it's a fit. It's a real fit. And, you know, you throw him on New Orleans and that team could be pretty darn good. NFC West, everybody has a QB. So we're looking at potentially a team like New Orleans, a team like the Washington football team. I think the Washington football team might be the best one. Obviously, New Orleans is a playoff team. You put a QB on there, it's great. But aside from and Washington was a playoff team, but not really at 7-9. So in terms of like the lower echelon teams, I think Washington's probably the best. They're better than Denver. Denver's got a good defense. They've got some pieces on offense, but I'm not really feeling it. I tend to think Washington would probably be a good fit. But then again, you know, who knows? Because they didn't draft a QB either. So not a high QB. So either way, what would you get back for Aaron Rodgers? I don't know. A disgruntled Aaron Rodgers, I have no idea. What should Green Bay do becomes the question. I don't know. If we're operating under the same circumstances as what we have right now, you know, May 8th afternoon, I tend to think that they should just try and iron this out, obviously. You know what I mean? That's the best you can do. And I suggested the same thing with the Deshaun Watson thing prior to the accusations being made against him. The best thing you can do when you have a star quarterback is try and keep him. You know, because look at the free agent market. And this is per NFLTradeRumors.co, not com, .co. I mean, where are you going to go? Rob Griffin III, who we'll talk about in a sec, Matt Barkley, Blake Bortles, Brett Hundley, formerly of Green Bay. I mean, Phil Rivers retired. You can try and talk him out of retirement, but I doubt it. You know, Brian Hoyer, Nick Mullins, Blaine Gabbert, Drew Stanton. Can you get Alex Smith to come back if you promise he can start? Maybe. You know, is that the situation you want to try and open up? I don't know what that's going to do for you. You know, we take a look as we navigate over to Spot Rack to see who they have that might be different from this list. You know, all the ones you might consider are kind of gone. I mean, a guy like a Joe Flacco's gone. Even Jacoby Brissett is gone. You might be able to trade for him. Fitzmagic is in Washington. I mean, it's bad. It's a bad situation out there. There's really not a lot at the quarterback position. You want to go with Jordan Love? All right, give him a shot. You drafted him. But it's if they wind up having to move on from Aaron Rodgers, they could still be a decent team, but I think the players' morale will tank tremendously, and it's going to be a Herculean task for Matt LaFleur to keep this team together and continue their success, because right now on paper, they're one of the best teams in the NFC. You take a look at the fact that they almost beat the defending champions. They almost beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They had them on their field, driving down the field. Rodgers doesn't run into the end zone. They wind up doing the weird thing with kicking the field goal. Is that what soured him? Is that what we're really doing here? A coach's decision? It's the same thing as Sherman. You know, the Seattle kind of impending possible dynasty broke up because of a bad coaching decision. You know, they went for the throw at the goal line, and Malcolm Butler made the best play of his entire career, and they were never the same. Still haven't been. So, you know, shrug your shoulders at that one, but I don't know. Now let's talk about this. How long does it take to get called a bust? And I know that's a little bit of a hard jump, right? But we're talking draft season, so I saw a post from Catch the Blitz, who I follow on Instagram. If anyone from Catch the Blitz is listening, shout out to you guys. It's a quality page. And they were doing their top 10 draft busts since 2010. And number one was our boy Bobby Griffin III. And honestly, I found this perplexing, because Robert Griffin has significant extenuating circumstances. And it's obvious. He hurt himself. He was never the same after the torn ACL. I mean, we take a look. His rookie season, 3,200 passing yards, which is a hair under his career high, 65.6% completion percentage, 20 touchdowns, 5 picks, 5. QBR is 69.4. We take a look at his rushing yards, 815 rushing yards, which is averaging 6.8 yards a carry, 7 touchdowns. I mean, the guy played out of his mind. To call him a bust is kind of nuts to me, because he didn't even have the chance. When he came back, he was clearly not the same, and then we see more injuries, and you take a look, the guy hasn't started, you know, legitimately started, quote-unquote, in 5 years. Drafted in 2012, didn't play the entirety of the 2015 season. 2014, he starts 7 games, 4 touchdowns, 6 picks. I mean, the guy didn't have a chance. And what I'm really getting at here is, how long does it take to be called a bust, and what kind of circumstances are you willing to consider? Now, riddle me this. Let's look at another first-round QB, yeah? Let's take a look at a guy who you guys might have heard of. Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow gets drafted, right? 25th pick, later in the first round. Let's take a look at a random NFL draft here. Let's go to the let's go to 2011, the year after Tim. Who goes number 25? James Carpenter of the Seattle Seahawks. Is James Carpenter a bust? You know, is James Carpenter a great player? I mean, he's taken right after Cam Jordan, which is a bad look. But James Carpenter, currently a free agent at the age of 32, played for Seattle for 3 years. You know, he was there when they won the Super Bowl. Was it because of him? Probably not. Let's go one more year, 2012. 25th pick, Dante Hightower. Good player. Right after him at 26, Whitney Mercilus. Whitney Mercilus a bust? I think Whitney Mercilus was a pretty good player. Second team all pro. So what are you looking for at the end of the first round? Green Bay takes Nick Perry at 28. San Francisco takes A.J. Jenkins at 30. A.J. Jenkins, considered by many to be a bust. Played 1 year with the team. You know? So a guy like Tim Tebow, who did not develop in the slightest at the quarterback position. He just didn't. You know, and look, I'm a Tebow fan of sorts. They bring him in. His rookie year, throws 82 passes. He has exactly a 50% completion percentage. 1-2 in his starts. You know, didn't really do much. And you're thinking, all right, this was a waste of a pick. So the next year they go, all right, well, let's throw him out there and see what happens. And we all know what happened. To the tune of a 46.5% completion percentage. To the tune of, you know, a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. The guy throws for 1,700 yards, in 11 starts, appeared in a couple other games. And he ran for 660 yards and 6 touchdowns. And he won them a playoff game. Like, he threw for 300 yards in that playoff game. You want to say, all right, 80 of them came on that one play in overtime? Sure. It's still a win. So if Robert Griffin is a bust, then Tim Tebow is not. He's better than Bob. And I think Bob was not a bust. I think Bob was unfortunate circumstances. And I don't think Tebow's a bust. You know, the classic bust, obviously, is a guy like Ryan Leaf. Ryan Leaf, you know, drafted alongside Peyton Manning, out of the league, you know, after a handful of years. In his career, a 4-17 starting record. I mean, 14 touchdowns to 36 interceptions. He just wasn't it. You know, a guy like Jamar. And that's the thing is, in order to be a bust, there has to be something that goes into it. And it can't just be, look, Bob Griffin was a high pick. Bob, obviously, being Robert III. He went right alongside Andrew Luck. Right? So it's all based on expectations. Andrew Luck, who went on to have a pretty good career. You know, 3 straight 11-5s to start his career, 40 touchdowns in 2014. Injuries caught up to him, and then obviously he retires real early. You know what I mean? Just real early. And that's kind of the sad part. You know, his last season was at the age of 29 years old, 39 touchdowns to 15 picks. The guy had one losing season, and it was only because his team went 2-5. He only started 7 games. And even in that year, he didn't throw more picks than touchdowns. I mean, is Andrew Luck a bust? Because that's the thing. If we're setting our expectations, Andrew Luck was supposed to be a Hall of Fame quarterback. By many, he was considered the next Peyton Manning. That's why they were so willing to move on from Peyton Manning. Well, let's take a look at what a guy named Peyton Manning did in those same seasons that Andrew Luck happened to play. So, Andrew Luck in 2012 goes 11-5. Peyton Manning goes 13-3, 37 touchdowns to 11 picks. Okay. Well, maybe he caught up to him in 13. In 13, they go 11-5, 23 touchdowns, 9 picks. Peyton, oh, by the way, just throws for 55 touchdowns and leads one of the historically best offenses in football. They get punked in the Super Bowl, but at least they made it. 2014, Peyton Manning goes 39 touchdowns, 15 picks. Team goes 12-4. 2014, Andrew Luck has his best year of his career. 40 touchdowns, 16 picks, which for all intents and purposes is the same as 39 and 15. He throws for about the same amount of yards. So in his best year of his career, he is 38-year-old Peyton Manning. Peyton's last year in 2015, easily the worst year of his career. He gets hurt, beat up all year, and they wind up winning the Super Bowl on the back of the defense. Oh, by the way, in that same year, Andrew Luck only plays 7 games. And his team didn't do so well. 2-5 in those games. The years after Peyton retired, obviously, we just discussed. So, was Luck a bust? I don't think so. But if we're talking, you know, you have to set your expectations realistically. And that's something I think kind of flounders in certain front offices and organizations. And it hurts teams in the long run. It does. Because you have to know what you're setting yourself up for, and you have to realistically evaluate yourself for that. For example, the 2020 New York Jets, right? Let's take them. Or should I say, is it 1920, technically? It's 2020. So the 2020 Jets, they go 2-14. And you think, wow, that team was awful. They really underperformed. They were expecting Sam Darnold to take that next step. And, you know, the front office is a big fan of Sam Darnold, so he's got to be taking that next step. No, that's a stupid thing to think if you're in that front office. And here's why. Look at the team you put around him. I'm not saying Sam Darnold is Peyton Manning, and he's going to have this, you know, growth into a superstar. But when you're looking at Jamison Crowder as your leading wideout, with Breshad Perriman as your number two, that's not a good passing game. It's not. Chris Herndon at tight end. Denzel Mims. Look at Mims. Look at what he did. No. Oh, well, maybe they leaned on the running game, Nick. You're being unfair. Frank Gore was their leading back. This team was going to be bad if you had David Copperfield at quarterback. This team is bad. You know, the defensive end of it, they've got some decent players, but they trade Jamal Adams away. They get a big King's ransom for it. But you just know this team is not going to be good. So was Sam Darnold a bust for the New York Jets? It's an interesting thought. Sam Darnold, I've talked about ad nauseum, it seems. He has not played well for the Jets, and he has not impressed me in the slightest. However, I ask you to point to one of these Jets teams that was supposed to be a playoff team. His rookie year? Is that the one? You know, no, because the year before they were 5-11. So why would they magically go from 5-11 to a good team when he's a rookie? Oh, who's the leading rusher on that team, Nick? It's got to be Isaiah Crowell. Robbie Anderson was their leading wideout. I liked Robbie Anderson. If you've listened to the show, first of all, I thank you for sticking around, as always. But if you haven't, I was big on Robbie Anderson. And when he went to Carolina, I forecasted, you know, I'm proud of this. You know, everybody gets to talk about their wins. I can talk about mine. I knew he was a pretty good player, but he's on the Jets. And what else is on that offense? Chris Herndon, again, the names keeps popping up. Quincy Enunwa. Thought he was a decent wideout, but they didn't really do much with him. Terrell Pryor at the ripe age of 29. Which year were they supposed to be good? Take a look at his sophomore year. They change head coaches, which means they change their offensive scheme and everything completely, right? Or they change a lot of schemes, rather. Completion percentage goes up. Touchdowns go up. Interceptions go down. Yards go up. That's an improvement. Sophomore year improvement. That's good. QBR, about the same. Passer rating goes up. Okay. Well, that means they must have had a lot around them. Well, they signed Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell, big acquisition. He ran for 800 yards. Phenomenal. And that's where we get the Jamison Crowder. Demaryius Thomas was on this team. Like, and they have nothing at tight end. They talk about what's the cliche? The tight end is the safety blanket of the quarterback, right? So a young QB has no tight end. And you see the same thing in the same stadium with the New York Giants. Evan Ingram is just not a safety blanket at all. He has bricks for hands, and I mean, he's fast, but he's just got bricks for hands when it matters. So was Sam Darnold a bust? Perhaps. But it's all about the expectations. I didn't expect Sam Darnold to walk in and turn this franchise around because the team around him sucked. And if the team around you sucks, you're going to suck. Robert Griffin was not a bust because he took the team around him and elevated them into a playoff team prior to an injury which derailed his career. Was Sean Livingston in the NBA a bust? No. He had a traumatic knee injury and it took forever for him to get to a place where he was comfortable enough to even be a role player for the Golden State Warriors. You know, it's just the way it is. Injuries happen. They derail careers. Was Tim Tebow a bust? First-round pick quarterback that took you to the playoffs once? There's quite a few first-round pick quarterbacks that didn't sniff the playoffs. I tend to think he wasn't. So, you know, as we take a look through, and obviously, you know, Sam coming into the league in 2018, yeah? So let's scroll through this draft class. Baker Mayfield, not a bust. Saquon Barkley, pretty good running back. Denzel Ward, pretty good corner. Bradley Chubb, good pass rusher. Quentin Nelson, might be the best player in this draft. Dominant offensive lineman. Josh Allen, coming out of nowhere. Right? You take a look. Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen a bust? Josh Rosen got his chance in 2018 for Arizona, and we pick on Josh Rosen quite a bit. We do. We do. You know, you take a look, who's on that team? Well, David Johnson, who I like, but he's not the same, right? He's never going to be the same. Receiving core led by Larry Fitzgerald at 35. Christian Kirk, who's a decent wideout. Ricky Seals-Jones. It's not a good team. So we rip on Josh Rosen, and I tend to think Rosen might escalate into that bust territory. But it's and part of that comes from the confidence that he came in with. I'm going to make all these teams regret passing on me. But it's almost unfair to him. He got his rookie year to try. He started three games for the 2019 Miami Dolphins, a team that went 5-11. They were 5-8 when he wasn't on the field. you take a look at, you know, he put up, you could make the argument, significantly worse numbers in limited reps than Ryan Fitzpatrick. 10% lower completion percentage. One touchdown to five picks. Fitzmagic, 20 touchdowns to 13 picks. Okay, well, who was on that team? No one. The team wasn't good. Leading receiver, Devontae Parker's decent. Mike Gesicki's pretty good. You know, they were all right, but it just wasn't there for Rosen. The point being, and the whole reason I wanted to get into this, and like I said, it's all about expectations, but I was kind of beside myself when I heard someone say that a guy like RG3, especially because we all know the circumstances, was a bust. I think that's a little bizarre, and I think we should wait to levy a claim like that, especially when we know that the guy, obviously, was bad luck. Next, and this is the second to last thing of the episode, we're going to talk a little bit about the Phillies open QB competition, which is what they're going to be going into next year with, according to first-year head coach Nick Sirianni. I believe he said it was either him or the general manager. I think it was Sirianni. So, last year, Jalen Hurts played in 15 games, but, you know, only threw 150 passes, 52% completion percentage for 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns, 4 picks. Now, the thing about that is, quite a few of those might have been come off the sideline and take a shot play, you know, kind of just chuck it up, like the Taysom Hill shenanigans and things like that. But if we take a look down to the game logs, we notice, like, you know, he really wasn't, and I said this during the end of the year, he wasn't all that. You know, he goes 7 for 20 against Washington, and we talk about benching him. I could understand benching your QB when he's 7 for 20, but in a game like that, benching him for a guy that's a no-name, you don't need to evaluate him, you need to evaluate Jalen Hurts, it's bizarre. The game before, 21 for 39. Before that, 24 for 44, a little better. 17 to 30, a little better. 5 for 12 coming in against Green Bay in a little bit of mop-up duty. I don't know. He didn't really show me that much. I tend to think he'll be the day one starter, obviously. I mean, his competition is Joe Flacco. And Joe Flacco is, well, he's not Joe Flacco anymore. He played in a handful of games for the Jets, 55% completion percentage. You know, I mean, there's nothing there. We just talked about that was a bad team. Even the year before in Denver, 65% completion percentage, but, you know, 6 touchdowns, 5 picks. I mean, year before when he was benched in Baltimore, 2,500 yards through 9 games, not bad. 12 touchdowns, 6 picks. I mean, there might be something left in the tank, but I tend to think it's more about evaluating Hurts at this point. And I think if they for some reason go with Flacco out of the gate, I think that'll say something about what they think of Jalen Hurts. Because what do you stand to gain from starting a 30, I believe it was 36 during the season? He's 36 right now. Turned 36 in January. What do you gain from starting a 36-year-old Joe Flacco? You think Joe Flacco is going to have a late career renaissance and lead this Eagles team to the Super Bowl? I can sell you some magic beans. Like, I mean, they're going to be improved with the addition of a guy like Devontae Smith on the offensive side. Maybe he'll ball out for them. Hopefully they'll get a little bit healthier. It wouldn't shock me if they competed in this division, maybe even won the division. But there's no point in starting Joe Flacco. I mean, the reason that theoretically people were okay with benching Wentz for Hurts is because Wentz wasn't performing up to his usual level, and because Hurts was young, and you're like, okay, let's see what we have in him. You know, it's similar to when the New York Football Giants, and I always make these comparisons, when they benched Eli Manning for Geno Smith. Now, at the time, they had Kyle Lauletta on the roster, and people knew probably Lauletta wasn't the guy, but why bench him for Geno Smith, who you know is not the guy? If you're not a win-now team, then just evaluate talent, right? You know, don't bother trying to sign so-and-so to save the season. And the argument against this, obviously, would be a team like Miami from last year, who signed Ryan Fitzpatrick, who started Ryan Fitzpatrick in Tua's rookie year, right? Which is fine. Usually in the rookie year, you're okay. And it depends on the situation, but they brought in a journeyman so he could sit on the bench. But then they bring in Tua, and then they think, ooh, we might make the playoffs. We got to go back to Fitzpatrick to save our bacon against the Raiders, to save our bacon against so-and-so. So now, in the back of this kid's head, he's got to worry about that. He knows you're not confident in him finishing those games off. And granted, he played in a system where, you know, you can get benched at Alabama. Ask Jalen Hurts, you know, and ask Tua, who came in to save the day. It happens. But I tend to think that might rattle you a little bit. Obviously, they couldn't bring Fitzpatrick back. He's gone now. He's in Washington, as we mentioned. But I wonder if he'll be thinking during the course of some of these games, who's going to save my bacon? Are they really confident in me? So, and they tried to make the playoffs and missed it anyway, so it was a waste. What's the point? You might as well just went down with the ship. Either way, it doesn't make sense for Philly to start Flacco. If they start Flacco, he won't finish the year anyway. So just let Hurts go out there. If he has a bad year, he has a bad year. You draft a QB next year. Who cares? I mean, it's not like they took Hurts, you know, number five in the draft. Or like when they moved up. Or did they move up for Wentz? I think they might have. Or when they took Wentz really high. Either way. Eagle fan, correct me in the comments section, if there's a comment section where you're listening. Or on social media, everywhere, at Nick Donatic, NikDonatic. You know the deal. They took Hurts 53rd, second round, you know, or 21st in the second round, 53rd overall. You know, he had to transfer from Alabama. He played at Oklahoma. He looked good, all right, but Oklahoma's really talented, same in Alabama. You know, I mean, A.J. McCarron looked great at Alabama, and what has he done in the NFL? It's a lot of guys like that. They played at a really good school. They had a lot of really good players around them, and then, eh. So, if Hurts winds up a bust, it won't kill you, so just let him play. I don't understand why they wouldn't. I guess I get it. You want him to feel like he earned the job. But if going in, everybody kind of assumes he's going to get it anyway, what are we doing? What are we doing at that point? You know what I mean? Just wanted to do one last thing here towards the tail end. Thoughts on the Juwan James situation. Juwan James, if you don't know, signed an offseason contract, I believe, with the Denver Broncos. Offensive lineman. Gets hurt. I believe he tore his Achilles while working out in the offseason. And supposedly, the NFL took a stance that the Broncos would not have to compensate him since he was working out on his own volition. But there's a couple of ways you can view this. And I tend to lean towards the players, if I'm being completely honest, because do you want guys to come back into camp out of shape? Because then they get a bad rep. Right? Every guy that comes back out of shape, you know it. Right? You know it, you can see it, and they tell you about it. So this guy is trying to come back in better shape, trying to have a good year. He happens to get hurt. It's bad luck. You know, and I mean, at the end of the day, you want to talk about putting a clause in somebody's contract? I don't know about that. It's a little sus, but you got to pay the guy his money. Look, if you want to do that in the future, put in a clause where, look, if you're hurt on your time, we're paying you this, whatever. If their agent and the player will agree to it, then they'll agree to it. But the fact of the matter is you got to pay the guy, and it's really disingenuous to ink him to a contract, and then you know you're okay with him working out. If he came in looking like, you know, he was Dwayne The Rock Johnson, like he's built, and all of a sudden he's going to be one of the best O-linemen in the league, you'd be ecstatic. So it's a little disingenuous, very disingenuous, I would say, to now pull away the incentive for all that working out because he happened to get hurt. I don't think it would be fair, and I stand by the union not standing for that. You know, I can understand where they're coming from. They lost their money on their investment so quickly. It's not worth it. Don't go with that. Come on. Come on. You're better than that. You're better than that. One more, we had the 50-year options thing, but I don't think we really care about talking about that in this episode. Well, we'll bring that up in the next one as we push towards the 55-minute mark. I think that'll bring us to the end of this month's episode, episode number 105 of the Necessary Roughness podcast, presented by Last Word on Sports. Our next episode, we're still monthly. We're in the off-season. Hope you guys are having a, you know, pushing towards the summer and enjoying your time. We'll talk June 19th. That's the day we're targeting for the following episode. Maybe we'll do a little tier list shenanigans, because I always mention, you know, the tier list of receivers and QBs and running backs and things like that. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll break down some other things, some proposed rule changes that I've heard about that I've been pushing to the back burner. Maybe we could go over the fifth-year options. We'll see as we get closer to it. I'm sure there'll be news. Maybe Aaron Rodgers will have a new team. I wouldn't bet on it, But then again, I'm in New York, so we're not allowed to bet on those things anyway. Either way, thank you for joining us for this month's episode. I appreciate you. If it's your first episode, join us next month. I love it. Thank you so much. If you've been around, I thank you for sticking around. As always, I'm your host, Nicholas Donatic, signing off.